Oh my gosh.
Oh,
all right.
Here we go.
Tell us where we're wrong, Brett.
All right. You're both proving, I think, the point of the episode, which is recency bias, right? Like you both said, I watched this guy play, and therefore I believe, based on my biases, that this
is
the best ever. We copped it, though. We fessed up to the biases.
Hoi hoi, welcome to Head Games, the science and psychology of sports. I'm Dr. Brett Levine, joined as always by Dr. Ben Rosenberg. Ben, how are you?
Beautiful, man. It's Sunday, drinking some iced coffee with oat milk over here. Highly recommend if you haven't tried it. But I'm doing good. How are you?
Good. Coffee with regular milk. No oats involved.
Sad feeling for you, but that's good.
I'll live, I think. TJ's back. TJ Void, our good friend, former high school and college basketball player. You work in education. Father, children's author, and host of the 2% podcast. TJ, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well, fellas. How are y'all?
Doing good, man. Happy to have you back again from
happy to be
Houston.
Here. By the way, oat milk better than almond milk.
Far superior.
It's not even close.
It's no competition, man. It's no competition. It's the only kind of non-milk milk that I think is good in coffee.
Hey.
Or really good at all, honestly.
Yes, it is. I agree.
Hot take for the day right there. Oat milk.
Yeah, yeah. Market.
As exciting as milk is, I don't think we want to spend the next 45 minutes.
Right, let's not.
But I'm sure there are podcasts about milk if you guys want to dive into that.
my next time. We'll start our own thing.
Today's episode is all about bias. We'll get into a little bit more into the details as we talk about recent news. Mm-hmm. First topic, we touched on this last episode, and we were excited because the baseball season was about to start. It had been a while since we had seen baseball. I think it was like 8 months, and it was back. It's been back for over a week now. And the record was within the first 9 days of the season returning, 8 teams had COVID-related illness breakouts, most notably the Marlins, who had 18 players test positive. I just saw today that Joey Votto, tested positive on the Reds.
Oh, wow.
The Reds already had, I think, a breakout. First bias to mention here is hindsight bias. And I mean, I'm going to do a terrible job explaining it, and Ben, you should probably lean into this, but it sounds a bit like what hindsight really is in general, which is looking back on this, how did we ever expect the baseball season to exist when if you watch games, it's like some guys are wearing masks. They're not really social distancing. They're not in a bubble. They're traveling. Ben, why don't you start with a definition of hindsight bias, since I probably screwed that up. And then I want to get TJ's take on whether we think there's going to be a baseball season or not.
I mean, you nailed the kind of initial, which is like, we feel like we should have known that this was going to happen. Like we feel like we should have known this was doomed from the jump. And so that really illustrates hindsight bias, right? Which is this idea that after something happens, when we look back at it, it seems like that should have been predictable. Like we should have known, kind of setting up the baseball season, these teams would be traveling. They're not bubbling like the NBA. They got all these, the rosters are expanded. So they got like 30 guys traveling plus staff and everybody else. Mm-hmm. We should have known. That's it. That's hindsight bias, right? Looking at something that, something in the past should have been more predictable than, of course it was. Like, maybe there were indications we should have known this would happen, but it now really feels like, man, we should have had some idea that this is where this was going to go.
Right.
Disaster.
TJ, was there any conceivable way that baseball could have been played safely?
I just don't think so. Specifically because I didn't even realize how many guys were on a baseball roster. And so how can you house – where are you going to be to where there's also facilities to play these games? Even with a shortened season, that's a long time to be holed up together. That's a lot of people, a lot of protocol. You hear about the NBA bubble and everything that they go through every day. Yep. I just don't know if that was even possible for, like, would you let the pitchers, you know, stay in their room for 4 days and come on the fifth day? Or, like, there's just too many, there was way too many moving parts. And baseball just, it just doesn't update. I mean, baseball has just, it's a traditional sport with traditional rules, and it's really hard to update the protocols and the technology and things like that that go into it. Plus, again, we talked about the bench clearing brawls last time, and we had one. Like, it wasn't even, of course, their brawls are used extremely loosely,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But
brawls.
What? Or when there was a manager, I forget which team, that wanted to come yell at the umpire, and the umpire was struggling to put his face mask on, and he just had to hold. It just doesn't make sense, right? So the answer, that's a long way to say no.
Yeah.
Not
yeah.
a full season.
Yeah. Yeah. You hit it. I mean, it is weird out there with umpires trying to put their masks on. You know, guys are kind of social distancing, but they're still kind of bumping, and there's some guys without masks on. I think the what really is going on here is that it's hard to get professional athletes to listen because they're professional athletes, and you know, they're highly paid, and a lot of them sadly are probably, I hate to say this, but egotistical, and I don't need to listen to you, and maybe exceptionalism and all of that. And you know, without the league clamping down in terms of these are the rules, I think that's why we have outbreaks. I like what TJ mentioned though. It's really, he alluded to like the culture of baseball, that baseball has this culture of being very traditionalist and, you know, kind of stuck in its ways. Whereas you look at the NBA, kind of football, but really the NBA is sort of being the most modern sport.
Completely.
And I think that's a good transition, because what will be the fate of the NBA? The NBA's just started as well. They've got a very different approach with the bubble. The NFL might be bubbling. TJ, I want to pass this back to you. All this being considered, what's the fate of the NBA?
I actually think the NBA is going to finish this season. But the NBA is in a really good spot because they have the least amount of people to consider per roster, right? When you look at the NBA games now, when you look at the sideline, which I don't know if that necessarily makes sense, that you come from a court where you're bumping into each other, then you social distance on the bench.
Yeah,
but,
that doesn't make sense.
Whatever. And I heard that the referees had like push button whistles instead of the whistle that you blow.
Oh, crazy.
And that would explain why the refereeing has just sucked. And because I thought they were just rusty, you know, but now it makes sense that maybe they are trying to push the button and it's just not working. Maybe. But
it's just the fact that NBA refs are fucking shitty.
They are bad.
And like that's another factor.
Yeah. And they don't have the crowds to yell, "That was a travel." Whatever. But I think that the NBA, I've heard that Adam Silver is considered, first of all, Adam Silver is a great commissioner.
Yeah.
Because he's not afraid to involve the players. And even though he's an older gentleman, he's been around long enough to see that David Stern took the NBA a certain place by making the players the forefront. I think he does a good job of that. But I think I've heard that the next season they're gonna try to play in chunks. You know, kind of like 2 month chunks in the bubble. Bring them to a bubble, have the same kind of protocols. Then you go home for a month or so, come back. I don't know if that's, you know, I just know that having 4 basketball games on July 31st was amazing.
Yeah.
And the games, the product hasn't really fallen off.
Yeah.
Right? You look at the games, the virtual audience is a bit weird, but they have the big, you know, plexiglass in between the announcers. I think they've done as good a job as you could possibly do. And I think that this may be a little, at least parts of it, will be part of the NBA kind of norm moving forward.
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah.
Well, you look at the NBA and can contrast to MLB, and it's so innovative, right? Like, they're actually doing things that are different, that are unique. We're going to bubble our guys. Everybody's going to be constantly tested. Players are going to play with no fans. Very few people are going to be around. The only people in the bubble are like a few writers who go through the same protocol testing as everybody else. And then MLB, on the other hand, is like, we're going to come up with these random gimmicky in-game things, but we're not going to do shit, basically, to give players directives about what to do off the field, right? How to keep themselves and their families safe. We're just going to send them home. Like, no big deal. Nothing will happen. Just like, that's just, it's hindsight bias to think, like, we should have known that. But at the same time, like, we should have fucking known that, right? Like, we should have known that this is how it shaked out.
Right. Ben, but I'm sorry. Real quick, I think what the MLB did not account for was people actually bringing their personal beliefs into it as well. Mm-hmm. See, the NBA bubble just eliminated that. Like, whether you believe in masks or whether you believe it's a hoax, that doesn't matter. Here's what you have to do every day. If you don't do it,
if you want to play, you're here.
This is what happens, right?
It's true.
Because
that's a good point.
But the MLB, you're able, you go home, you travel. And if you don't think, you know, whatever your beliefs are, I'm not saying whether it's right or wrong, because that's inconsequential. Yeah. But if you bring your personal beliefs into it, then that increases the margin for error.
Yeah.
And it only takes one for a whole team to get knocked out. And then when a team is knocked out, they knock out the opponent as well, because they were possibly in contact during the game. So it's and then there's a ripple effect with the division. So TJ, I think you hit the nail on the head, right? It's, you can't control for the personal biases with, you know, 40, I think it's a 40 man roster across 30 teams is 1200 players. And if one of them says, I don't believe in this, and, you know, goes out to McDonald's or whatever, Chipotle, and comes back, and well, we're seeing those effects now. Ben, I want to go back to you, and you know, with this theme of hindsight bias. Mm-hmm. We're talking about how great the NBA is, but are we going to be having this podcast in a week or 2 weeks or a month and say, ah, man, we should have seen it. We should have seen how this all was going to crumble. What is the hindsight bias with the NBA that we might run into? And we touched on the NFL. Let's talk about the NFL as well. What do you think?
NBA, I think, to TJ's point, I think the NBA is going to be fine, man. I mean, it seems like they're doing everything they need to do to control things. I was listening to a pod yesterday that had Taylor Rooks, who's a writer for The Athletic and NBA reporter. She's in the bubble. She was talking about her daily experience. And I mean, she was like, I wake up, I get tested, I have breakfast, I get tested. Like, in order to go into any facility, any room, you have to scan your like bracelet in that they're all wearing. The thing goes green to indicate that you're negative. You go in. She was actually talking about how she had a false positive when she first got there, and that they immediately quarantined her. They ran this, reran that sample. Then they tested her a bunch of more times. Every time it was negative. Then only then was she able to go back into the bubble and interact with people. So I think the NBA is going to be fine. The NFL, just like MLB, I think there's no fucking way, man. I mean, these rosters are even bigger, right? I mean, a training camp NFL roster's got like 90 guys.
Yeah.
So for now, they're going to be sort of bubbled at their training camp facility. And to the extent that they can stay there, maybe they'll be okay. Mm-hmm. But as soon as teams start traveling to play other teams, like, we're in the same boat. And I would love to see an NFL season, don't get me wrong, but I have a hard time seeing how it'll possibly last.
Yeah. I mean, just again, how? And think about the financial responsibilities to test all those guys all the time.
Well, they got the money.
They do. But is Roger Goodell willing to, and the owners, you know, willing to spend that money?
Yeah.
Right. And also, like you said, it's 52 guys even when the season starts.
Right.
It's a 52-man roster.
Right. Plus all the coaches.
Plus they have like a inside linebacker coach, a middle linebacker coach, an outside linebacker coach, D-line a defensive coach. Coordinator. Yeah. They got a get-back coach. They got a coach hold. Like there's like a four. There's 40,000. There's two coaches per person in football. And so not only do I think the NFL won't happen, I don't think college football is going to happen.
I don't think college is going to happen.
Yeah. I just don't see how football is going to do it safely. Yeah. Those locker rooms, those guys are huge, and those locker rooms they don't scale.
Yeah.
You know, so they're right beside each other. They're spitting and yelling and carrying on, and I just don't see it. I don't see it.
And I think this is sort of exemplified by what a lot of players were tweeting about last week when all these protocols came out for NFL players, right? So I just remember Richard Sherman tweeting about the players aren't allowed to exchange jerseys after a game. So he's like, so we can get on the field and literally be spitting in each other's fucking faces for 3 hours. And then I can't exchange a jersey with somebody on the other team after the game.
Because like, that is the culprit, right? That's the culprit. The exchange of jerseys at the
end. That's what's going to do it.
But I'll tell you what, Raj, between Raj and Manfred, I just don't know. They just pull stuff. They just do whatever, you know? And then Manfred said it was the players' fault. Like the players need to do a better job. And I'm thinking a better job of what?
Yeah.
I mean, you're allowing them this go home.
You're giving
and
them
travel.
This freedom of behavior, like you said. Yeah. Well, and we talked about last time looking forward to the MLB that like they didn't have much in the way of guidance about off-field protocols. And look, this is fucking coming to fruition. They didn't have guidance. And, you know, supposedly the Marlins went out to a party or something. Who knows if that happened? But there is evidence that after getting their first positive test, they made the decision as a team to still play via group text because they didn't have specific guidance from MLB as to what to do in that situation. That's absurd. Like, talk about hindsight bias. That oversight is ridiculous. How did that not get addressed before?
Seems like the only way the NFL is going to work is if they do maybe something with Ben's cat and, you know, Ben's cat's got all the answers. Do it. Your cat's brilliant. I can tell. Smarter than you, at least.
She is.
I think that, I mean, it sounds like a bubble has to be the way the NFL has got to work. And then it's like, well, where are you going to put it? Where are you going to find that many football fields? And where are you going to find a city large enough to hold all these people and clamp down and be as strict as like the NBA is? So,
When are you going to practice? Like, when are you going to, if you have a 32 teams times 52 dudes times 104 coaches, Tom's media personnel. Where do you practice?
No.
Yeah.
Impossible. It's impossible.
Where are we going to put 50,000
NBA's people? NBA rosters carry what, 12 guys? Like
12 dudes.
This is there's just no comparison, right?
You can
feasibly do the NBA in a bubble with other sports. I don't know.
And some of the older coaches, I mean, you got to think Pete Carroll is old. He don't look like it. He's old, right? Yeah. But some of the older coaches in the NFL, the Mike D'Antonis, the Alvin Gentrys of the world, they're actually coaching in their masks.
Yeah.
So are you going to ask football coaches to do this outside?
Yeah.
They're not going to do that.
Yeah. Well, last week I predicted the Angels would win the AL West. I'm sticking with that prediction if there is a season because they are trying to follow protocols, but it looks like we need every team to follow protocols, and that's sort of throws a wrench in who's being safest and who's not, because the only way it's going to be a season is if everyone is safe both inside, you know, the stadium and outside the stadium. So I guess we'll see. It makes me very, very sad. I want to move to our next topic along the theme of bias and give this enough time because I think there's plenty to be said about this topic. There are people right now, there's hundreds of millions of people talking about this right now. There's a meeting right now inside the Pentagon, and Frank and Jim are sitting at a table, and they're talking about the latest ballistic missile. And Frank is stopping, Jim, stop talking. Hold on. We need to discuss who are the top five NBA players of all time. It is debated constantly on our Twitter. It is debated everywhere on the planet. And I felt like it's worth us weighing in on this, but also it plays into this theme of bias. And I'm going to intro it, and then I just want to set up the rules for how this is going to work because we've each created our own top five NBA all time. The bias here is recency bias, and Ben, correct me because you can probably define this better than I can, but the idea is that we're biased by what we've been exposed to recently, right? This happens all the time, I think, with surveys too, right, is that if we don't adjust the order of the questions, you're biased by the question that comes before another one. So if I ask you about how old you are and then ask you a question about how old you feel, it's going to be biased by the fact that you had to, you know, record your age and maybe you feel older or something like that because I have just biased you based on the recency.
Yeah, the more things that have happened to us more recently bias our judgments because they're easier to call to mind, right?
Yeah. So
if we're asked to make a prediction about the likelihood of something happening in the future, we draw more heavily upon the things that have happened to us recently in order to make those predictions, right?
How was my survey example about feeling old? Was that good or was that bad?
Yeah, it was okay. That's more like a kind of contrast effect, more specific to what happens on a survey. But the idea is the same, right? That our judgments about things are colored by what has happened to us recently.
Yep.
And that's really the reason for bias. Yep. Like, mm-hmm. We use our recent experience as a baseline to kind of make predictions about what'll happen, what's likely to occur in the future.
This is going to come up, and I'm glad we've defined this. I just want to set the boundary, and I'm not going to say why, but this will come up later in these, I guess, discussions that we're about to have. So here are the rules. We're going to go one at a time. Okay. I'm going to say, if you can, start with your overall philosophy to how you did this, then go through your top five and give reasons one by one. Let the person finish, then we can discuss, and then we can move on to the next person.
Okay.
So TJ, you're our guest of honor, if you want to start us off.
All right. So first of all, being a basketball guy, this is the hardest thing for me to do.
Yeah.
Okay. My number one is clear. You want me to go 5-1 or 1-5?
It's up to you.
Okay. Give us your philosophy first.
So my philosophy is, number one, I can only go by what I've seen. Right. I'm a guy born in 1983, started watching basketball in the late 80s, early 90s. So up until now. Right. So that eliminates some of the guys that are awesome. Right. That have great statistics, whatever, even though I question Will Chamberlain's statistics sometimes because we've never seen them.
And some 100 points in a game, dude.
Yeah. OK. 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 And it was it was written with pen on like a notebook piece of paper, but whatever. So also it's what did you do to elevate your team, right? If you're supposed to be the greatest player, I can't give you excuses. And so I have to parse, not necessarily statistics, because statistics can say whatever you want them to say. Now, unless your stats are just unarguable, like if they're just, you can't deny them. Right. So that's kind of my philosophy on the best player. Like, I saw you, and yes, this guy may have better stats, but I saw this person, and my eye test supersedes everything for me.
All right.
Okay. So number five, and I go back and forth with 5 and 4, but I'm going to go Hakeem Olajuwon. Now, Hakeem Olajuwon is probably better than my number four person. But my number four person, which is Shaq, is more dominant, right? Shaq was specifically Lakers Shaq, right? And I flopped those two maybe because Hakeem gave young Shaq business. Like he couldn't, it was ridiculous what he did to him. And then a year before he even got to Shaq, remember that's the year that David Robinson had won MVP. But that's when the Dream Shake became a trademark, right? Because Hakeem Olajuwon had always played like that, but we just never really saw it because Hakeem was averaging 25 and 30 and 11 and all these crazy numbers before we really said, man, Hakeem is good. Yeah. And he started playing basketball so late in his life that it's amazing what he's actually able to do, to where now guys actually go to Hakeem Olajuwon for post help.
Yeah.
Right? Now he charges on my arm and a leg, but whatever. I would too.
Shit.
You know? Because I can teach you whatever. You're not me. So it's cool. And he was only 6'10". Yeah. All right? So you have to put yes.
But that's the era. That's like the era of the center.
So he had Patrick Ewing that he had to go through. He had David Robinson that he had to go through. He had Shaq. And he just torched them all.
Yeah.
And he was averaging like 33 in the playoffs.
Stupid, man.
And he has, the most blocks in history. So Hakeem Olajuwon is amazing. Okay. And then Shaq, because Shaq is Shaq. If Shaq wouldn't have been ring chasing at the end, and his stats would be even more crazy. And here's the craziest thing about Shaq. I truly believe Shaq never really worked on his game. He was just. When he got to LA, it's something clicked to where he was like, you know what? I'm just bigger than everybody.
Yeah.
Well, if I really want to dunk, I'm just going to dunk. But then he also led the break. He had the black tornado, the spin off the block.
Yeah.
He has the nastiest dunk on the history when he wrapped his legs around Chris Dudley. And Chris Dudley, Chris Dudley was willing to.
Josh, put the video clip of that.
He was willing to risk his life and limb to try to fight Shaq, which wouldn't have been a good idea, but whatever. Oof. Okay. So that's Hakeem Olajuwon, Shaq, Kobe. Okay, which I go back and forth. I was not a Kobe fan while he played, but I respected him for what he was. Because Kobe made the All-Star team his second year when he off the bench, averaging 15, right? But I knew Kobe was going to be good when he actually airballed those two threes against the Utah Jazz rookie year. But Kobe was just an amazing basketball player. The reason why I have him three instead of two, which I have LeBron number two, is because I don't think Kobe ever really figured out how to get others involved and be aggressive. If you think that there was the Phoenix Suns series when they were saying that he was shooting too much and he just deferred the last two games, and why you would ever defer to Smush Parker, and I don't know, okay? But he did it. Because he wanted to prove a point, right? But again, Kobe's last game of the season, he shot, 40 shots? Yeah. So that's Kobe, right? And that's what makes Kobe great is because he's relentless. And there really wasn't anything that he couldn't necessarily do. He even hurt his right shoulder one time and just shot a left-handed three-pointer because what are you going to do? You know, you're going to tell Kobe not to shoot? No, you can be traded, bro. That's why I can come in practice and just yell at you however you want because you can't fight me. You know, so number two is LeBron. LeBron has his stats are you can't really argue him. His impact on the game, you can't really argue. I personally think LeBron has huge holes in his basketball game, like just pure basketball, but his physical attributes overshadow it.
What kind of holes do you point out in LeBron's game?
So LeBron has no moves. None.
That's fair.
Right?
That's fair.
And so here's where people – first of all, I think LeBron gets more participation trophies than any great athlete in the history of the world, right? Like, well, look at the team he had. But hold on. If you're the greatest in the world, right, and if you have the best team – because that Miami Heat team was the best team in the finals the years they played.
Yeah.
You're not supposed to lose.
Yeah.
You're not supposed to get outplayed by Jason Terry ever. Okay.
Hey, I love the Jet, dude. That's
me too.
That's my guy.
Me too. Me too.
Love the Jet.
I love Jason Terry all the way back to Arizona. Okay.
Same.
I love I love Arizona guards in general. Damon Stoudemire, Salim Stoudemire,
Bibby,
Jason Gardner, Bibby, Miles Simon. Those are my guys.
Yeah.
Right. Jason Terry was great for the Hawks.
Yeah.
Jason Terry was a solid player for the Mavericks.
But if you're D-Wade, LeBron, and Chris Bosh, you shouldn't
you're
be
supposed in. To win.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay?
Yeah, you really are.
And I think LeBron is a great passer.
Yes.
For a wing player.
Yeah.
Now, when you try to play him full-time point guard, as you see now, that's a different monster. It just is, right? And I think that his passing at the end of games, you know, people try to compare that to Jordan's pass to Paxson, Jordan's pass to Kerr. That's not true. It's not the same thing because Jordan has already hit game-winning shots in those exact series, right? In the Phoenix Suns series, Jordan was averaging 42.
Yeah.
So that's a different ball game than if I'm bringing the ball up the court slow, asking for a ball screen, then passing to Sasha Pavlovich. Why would I ever pass the ball to him at the end? You know what I'm saying?
No, J.R. Smith, baby.
Hey, there's a saying in basketball called open for a reason, okay?
Yeah,
sometimes the best shot is me shooting it, period.
Bill Paxson, man.
Hey, man, sometimes. And then so Jordan is my number one, and I am one that thinks that it is not close. I've always thought that way, right? And if you want to go stats, because people like to go, well, in his seventh year, Jordan went to college for 3 years, too, okay?
Yeah.
But once Jordan got to the finals, he never lost.
Yeah.
He even after his baseball stint, if that's what you want to call it, he came back and he averaged, I think, 27 for those games in his career. If you'd have taken away the Wizards year, he would average 32, 6, Jesus. 5, 2.5 steals, shoot 51% from the field when he was always the best player on his team. Always, right? He averaged 30 for, I think, it was only one of four seasons that he didn't average 30. And one of those seasons, well, five if you want to take the 29.6. You know what I'm saying? But
we can round up.
Yeah, but two of those games were in the games in the season that he played less than 20 games. And this is with guys like Odin Polynice. And wow. who knows who else is on that team? Like, yeah. Those Bulls teams were top heavy. Yeah. Okay. Once you get past Kukoc and Pippen, and which I would argue, yes, Pippen, Jordan needed Pippen to win. But when Pippen didn't have Jordan.
Yeah.
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 So Jordan is my number one, and I really don't think it's that close.
All right.
Wow. All right. Brett?
I think you should go.
You want me to go? Okay.
Start with your philosophy.
So philosophy for me, kind of like TJ, man, I found it really hard to include guys like Bill Russell, Will, Oscar, because, like, as you said, I didn't see him play, right? Like, these guys are legends. I've seen clips. I've read about them. I've talked to my dad about them. But, like, I don't have the eye test, the face validity test for these guys. Like, I haven't seen what they could do on the court. So guys like that, I found it really hard to include in my top five just because of exactly that. So I didn't purposely limit my top five, like you said, TJ, to guys that I'd seen, but the way that it shook out, it was mostly comprised of players that I had seen play a decent amount. This isn't like I didn't go super deep into any crazy advanced stats or anything. I mean, this was more, again, kind of like TJ said, sort of eye test, right? Like, this is my take on where these guys should be ranked. So I'll give it to you 5-1, as TJ said as well. And shout out to Brett and my buddy Thomas. I asked him for his input as well because he's like the basketball head. Like, if I have basketball questions, I go to him. He knows everything. So I went to him to get his input on this as well. So number five for me is Larry Legend, Larry Bird. Unstoppable scorer, right? Like, in any era, unstoppable scorer, underrated defender, just incredible, incredible player that, you know, I didn't have the privilege of seeing play all that much, certainly, right? He's sort of towards the tail end as I'm kind of coming of basketball age, right? TJ, I was born in 84, so one year younger than you. But incredible, incredible player. Also very underrated passer. Interesting part, I think, of Larry Bird's game that people don't often talk about all that much. Number four, one of his contemporaries, Magic, for me. Right. Number four, obviously career relatively cut short. But just incredible, man, just to see, and again, relatively when I was young still, this is happening, but seeing more of his clips and whatnot from the time that he did play, just incredible passer, facilitator. When people talk about, like you said, TJ, LeBron being Magic-like, they're missing the boat, right? Like, LeBron, I agree, and I'll get to LeBron, but LeBron is a great passer, as you said, TJ, for a wing. Magic was just a great fucking passer, period. Incredible vision, amazing way of seeing the floor. Also, really good score. Number three, Kareem. Harder, again, I don't have experience seeing Kareem, but just knowing the level of dominance that he had and the way that he could use his game to score at any time in any given place on the floor. So top two, I flip-flop back and forth a lot on these. My top two are the same as yours, TJ, Bron and MJ. So go back and forth. I'm not as clear-cut as you were on putting MJ first. I do have MJ first. So I have LeBron number two and I have MJ number one. Again, with recency bias, we'll come back to that. I go back and forth, though. LeBron, to me, is – what he's been able to do over such a long period of time is
impressive.
Incredible, right? Like, we're at year 19, 17, is it now?
17.
And the minutes that he has on his body, the way that he takes care of his body, the way that he still uses his body is just ridiculous, right? Mm-hmm. And to your point, he doesn't really have a patented move. I think all these other guys we talk about have like a move, right? You talk about the Dream Shake. MJ had the turnaround, the fadeaway. Like there's, everybody's got a move. LeBron doesn't really have a move except like put his head down and be bigger than everybody and right. get to the cup. Maybe
which
the
is a chase, skill.
Maybe the chase down block.
Right.
But again, like as a facilitator for the position he plays, excellent, good, you know, good passer, really good court vision, can get a bucket whenever he wants, right? Not in the same way from anywhere on the floor, but he can either get to the line or get to the rack pretty much anytime he wants, just by nature of the fact that he's an athletic freak and he is bigger than the guys that are guarding him most of the time. Mm-hmm. So then number one, again, MJ, I mean, it's just hard to argue, man. Like, I think we are influenced by the fact that we grew up, we kind of came of age as basketball fans in the era of MJ, and it was just undeniably, he's everywhere.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to rock Jordans. Everybody wants to have their tongue out. Everybody wants to put on a fucking Jordan headband or Jordan armband. Like, I have a picture somewhere of me playing high school basketball with, like, an armband on. You know? That's like, come on. So, it's just hard to argue with Jordan from stats or from victories or from any perspective.
Right.
And then I think getting the insight from the doc that obviously aired a couple months ago, showing how he was able to take these group of guys as a leader, right? His leadership style was unique, but he most certainly was able to galvanize teams around him. Mm-hmm. And he had such a wide variety of teammates who had a wide variety of skills, and in whatever way it was possible, he really was able to bring these guys together. And again, a diverse group to win all these different times. So yeah. It's not a controversial take at all, but that's it.
I can dig it.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, all right.
Tell us where we're wrong, Brett.
All right. You're both proving, I think, the point of the episode, which is recency bias, right? Like you both said, I watched this guy play and therefore I believe based on my biases that this
yes
ever. We copped it though. We fessed up to the biases.
great you've set it up. And I, look, I'm not saying that my list is the be all end all, but I think it's a good foil to what you guys are saying, which is I tried to remove my biases.
Okay.
I tried to just look at the numbers and say, let's talk about this list, because there are variables that make up the best players of all time. We don't talk about Smush Parker being one of the best ever because he doesn't have the numbers to back it up, right? There are numbers. Yes, there are intangibles, right? I tried to weigh in those intangibles or those qualitative pieces that maybe we can't really talk about, or sorry, we can't really quantify. And you brought it up with Jordan, right? He made players better. He was a leader, right? So I threw that in there as well, but I tried to look at as many numbers as I could and build this list. Mm-hmm. So I also tried to weigh in things like era. So era was important, and it was also important in terms of NBA-ABA merger, because
the
number of teams that were available and the level of competition that was available really spiked in 1976 when there was a merger.
Right.
So, before then, the NBA was only 14 teams in 1970. In 1960, there was only
8 teams.
Yeah. And that would explain why Bill Russell has won 11 championships.
Yeah. Because
he played from 1956 to 1969.
There's nobody to beat.
Many teams.
He was playing a junior high schedule.
So, look, like I said, this I think there's deeper stats that we could go in. This is very much just surface level stats. This is not advanced in any way that was able to calculate this. I also don't think a lot of this was around for like Wilt Chamberlain and things like that. So I tried to use as much as I could to build this list. Number five, I've got Magic. So, let me talk about a little bit more about my philosophy to back up Magic. So I put a lot of weight in championships. We've got things like points per game, points, MVPs, rebounds, blocks, assists, steals, All of that goes into this, as well as the intangibles. I put a lot of weight in championships because I think that number one is a culture. That's how we value players. That's why we talk about these guys. I think that going through the playoffs puts more strain on your body. And I think it says a lot about your fitness and your ability to come back and play again the next year, because with every playoff game you play, that's one more day of not resting and playing at twice the intensity.
Right.
And so getting to the end and finishing and, you know, finishing it and playing at a different psychological level, playing in the playoffs than a regular season game. And rising to that level says something about you. It says that you're a champion.
Yeah.
To me, that weighs a lot. So I put most weight on championships. Magic had 5 NBA championships, and he only played 13 seasons. He played in a very good era of basketball, but not the best era of basketball.
Yeah.
He has he's 4th all time with 3 MVPs. He's 1st in assists. He made the steals list. He's 19th in terms of steals. So he's got diversity to his game. He makes the assists, but he also plays good defense and shows up with the steals. He's number 5 on my list.
Okay.
Kobe is number 4. Kobe played in, I think, the best era of basketball. You've got his competition, or his teammate, I guess, like Shaq, you could say. He played against LeBron. He played against AI. He played against Kevin Garnett. He played against Dwayne Wade, Steve Nash, Dirk Nowitzki. I think the 2000-2010s was arguably the best era. Kobe played in that era and won 5 championships. He's 4th all-time in points. I think playing against that competition and showing up on the points list, to me, put him just a little bit over Magic. But interesting, for me, number 3 right above him is Tim Duncan. Tim Duncan played in the same era. He also has 5 championships, same as Kobe. He's number 3, he's number 6 all-time in rebounds. He's also number 14 in points.
Mm-hmm.
The guy wasn't just, you know, a center sitting there rebounding. And yes, it's the system, and yes, Greg Popovich.
The big fundamental.
I don't think it is the system. But we'll talk about that later.
Yeah. All right.
He was just outside of my top 5, too.
Yeah, he was number – I wrestle with him, Hakeem, and Shaq all the time.
Yeah.
I've got him number 3 because unlike Kobe, I mean, Kobe was just points. Points, points, points.
Yeah.
And
You know, Kobe's number 4 all-time in points. Duncan shows up on both lists for points and rebounds, and he had the same number of championships, and he played during the same era. So Kobe played from 96 to 2016. Duncan was 97 to 2016. Same exact era, but showed up on both lists. To me, you're number 3. Number 2, because I don't have any recency bias, is Michael Jordan. All right? And I should explain why he's number 2 by talking about my number 1. Number 1 is Kareem. Number 1 is Kareem.
No LeBron. Wow.
No.
Interesting.
No. So, okay. So here's Jordan. Jordan plays 15 seasons. Okay. He's number 5 all-time in points. He's number 1 in points per game. He's number 2 in terms of MVPs. He's got 6 championships. He's also number 3 in steals. You didn't know that. You didn't know that. He's number 3 all-time in steals.
9-time first-team all-defense.
Yeah.
Okay, there you go. Okay, so we had – I mean, he definitely plays – he has some infamous steals, like the one against the Jazz.
Yeah.
He's got the intangible. We've talked about it already. What I think separates him from – or sorry, what I think separates Kareem from Jordan. Kareem is number 1 in points. Jordan is number 5. Kareem is number 1 in terms of MVPs. He has 6 to Jordan's 5. He's also number 3 in rebounds, and he's number 3 in blocks. He shows up top 3 on 3 categories. Three different areas of the game, arguably, with blocks, rebounds, points, 3 different dimensions. He won those championships after the ABA merger, so the competition was there. He won one of them in 71, right before the merger. So there was, I think, 14 teams. But by 1980, which is when he won his 2nd championship, you had 22 teams. So he played against a higher level. He played in the 80s. So a very good era, but not the best era. Jordan, I think, could be considered on the – I mean, the 90s were pretty damn good.
Yeah.
The 2000s, it's tough. I mean, we can talk about the best era of basketball, but
it's another debate for another day.
The 2000s probably have the better players.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I would agree with that.
Team-wise, you might lean towards 80s, 90s.
Yeah, because you could. There was no free agency.
Yeah.
Kareem played 20 seasons to Jordan's 15. That can explain why he's number one in points and number three in rebounds and MVPs. And blocks, but you know what? He played five more seasons because he could, because he had the durability, or you know, he had the drive, or whatever it was. Right. So, looking at numbers, trying to remove all your stupid recency bias lists, I've got Kareem one.
So you said he played 20 years because he could. You don't remember what Jordan averages last year with the Bulls?
Okay, look, I know he took time off. I know he tried to play. He's trying to play basketball, and there was a break before the Wizards. I get that, but you know what?
Okay, so hold on. But when he retired, the year 97-98, he played 82 games, started 82 games, averaged 29 points per game.
Yeah.
He clearly could have kept playing
for sure. Don't forget with the Wizards before he got hurt. Yeah. Him and Kobe were the only players to average 25, 5, and 5 at one point, at 40. Yeah.
It's stupid to question Jordan's durability. I'm not questioning Jordan's durability. And he got beat up. He did. But if you want to talk about eras, I think Kareem's era was, you know, during the 70s and 80s, was a hell of a lot more aggressive than the 90s.
You mean the era with no other 7-footers?
You don't think he's getting elbows in the ribs, though?
I don't know, man.
You don't think he's getting elbows in the ribs?
Of course he was, but like Jordan's getting fucking tackled, dude. Like,
there's a book on how you take him to the ground.
Yeah. That's true.
Their entire defense was literally, let's beat the shit out of MJ.
Yeah, beat the shit out of him.
Right?
The Jordan rule.
Yeah, the Jordan rule.
So for me, every statistical argument. Because Karl Malone has more points than Michael Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
Would you say he's better?
No, I waited championships.
No, because every time they were supposed to win, guess who beat them? MJ. You know what I'm saying? But Tim Duncan is an interesting one to me because his numbers in compared to the rest of the quote-unquote greats are pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but he's just – when you watch him play, you knew that he made a difference. Like, you knew that system, quote-unquote, that they like to, you know, bash the Spurs for, that system was created because Tim Duncan came.
Yeah.
That is not – he's not – he is the system.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But Kareem, to me, is probably the most accomplished basketball player. So, to me, Kareem is Tom Brady. Hmm. They're really accomplished. Mm-hmm. They have a lot of things to go, but they also played a really long time.
Yeah.
Right?
Longer time to acquire all of these.
How many championships did Kareem win with Magic Johnson?
I don't know.
Magic Johnson, I think five of them.
Yeah.
Right. And so why does that only? And this is my argument with LeBron fans again.
How many did Jordan win with Pippen?
That's my point. So they always bring that up, but then when you talk about LeBron, like, hold on. LeBron's three championships came with other great players at the time, right? Kyrie Irving at the time was arguably a top five player in the league. And
he hit the shot in that finals that allowed them to win.
And Kevin Love was arguably top two power forward in the league at the time.
Agreed.
And so this is what bothers me, right? So LeBron, again, I love LeBron for everything he does, both on and off the court. He has changed the game.
He's generational.
I love him. However, if you're telling me that you felt like you were the best player ever because you beat a team that won one championship, how? Yeah. Like, Steph Curry was after he got hurt for the first 4 or 5 years of his career, he was an afterthought. Then he got good.
Yeah.
Draymond Green was a second-round pick. Mm-hmm. Klay Thompson, nobody even knew necessarily who he was outside of Michael Thompson's son, right? And then that team wins one championship. Then they go 73-9 in the preseason. And I mean, in a regular season, don't win a championship.
Basically the preseason.
Yeah, but then now that makes you feel like you're the greatest player of all time when you had Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love? Yeah. I don't understand that. Like, I don't understand that mentality because – and so for me, the reason why Jordan is above and beyond to me is because even – it doesn't matter who his teammates were. His production was the same.
Yeah.
His production, you knew that you had to stop Michael Jordan and you still couldn't.
Yeah.
I mean, you talk about Kareem being the most heralded or the most like rewarded NBA player. I mean, people talk and compared him to Tom Brady. I think Tom Brady is considered the best quarterback ever. There's nothing wrong with that. There's something about the ability to rack up championships and to be on great teams and find great people and like call it luck or whatever it is. But it's like, the proof is in the pudding. So Kareem makes the top of my list because he's got the MVPs. He's got the championships. Yes, Magic was on for probably four or five of those. You're right.
And James Worthy, who's also Hall of Fame.
Right, right.
Goggles.
And those teams were great.
And Jamal Wilkes.
I mean, the same thing you can say to everybody on this list. Back to Duncan. Yeah. Duncan had Parker.
True.
I mean, during the time, was Parker.
Ginobili.
And Ginobili, six man.
Those
right?
are great teams, man.
Those are great teams. Is Parker at the time, is Tony Parker a top five player?
Top five point guard.
Is he a top position? Five player?
No.
Not overall, but maybe point guard in that
area. I think Tim Duncan does not get as much love as Kobe, and I think he's more accomplished.
I would agree with that. Tim Duncan is easy to forget.
Easy to overlook, man. He's the big fundamental for a reason, right? Like he never was flashy. He barely talked when he was playing. He talks more now, but he barely talked when he was playing. He just fucking showed up and produced every
for a very long time.
Night for a very long time, right? And like he was almost just there, like almost to a fault. He was just there and he just showed up and was always really good.
There's something to be said about no drop off though. So even though his numbers never really spiked or anything, it was just it only dropped off maybe the last 3 years.
Yeah.
I'll tell you a story about Tim Duncan. Tim Duncan, this was 2006, opening night. They played against the Cavs, right? And LeBron turns the corner and he just dunks on him. And I'm like, man, Tim Duncan, this may be it for old Tim, right? No more than 5 minutes later, he scores 16 straight points. And I said I would never say anything bad about Tim Duncan.
Wow.
Yep.
That's just what he was.
Bank shot.
Here's what people don't know. If you go to a high school gym, right, those bank shots were about 18 to 20-foot bank shots. So that means if you go to a high school gym, that's a three-pointer.
Yeah, that's a tough shot, man.
That's not an easy shot to just
– he's not shooting, like, 12-foot bank shots.
No. Yeah. Tim Duncan and Tim Duncan went through different eras because remember his first year was the lockout year,
right?
And they beat the Knicks that year, right? I believe in the finals with Sprewell and Allen Houston and those boys.
And then he won in 98.
Did he win back to back 97, 98
with Kerr? Right.
Kerr has a lot of championships, and then he won with Ori and Yeah, but those guys, you know what? The Tim Duncan argument is pretty strong, man.
And I forgot to mention, so I mentioned Tim Duncan being, so on my list, he was number three. I mentioned he's a two-way player in terms of points, 14th in points, sixth all-time in rebounds. He's also number five all-time in blocks.
Yeah.
Right.
Believe it.
Kobe's great. He's number four all-time in points, but like the diversity in the game, the same exact era, the same exact number of championships.
But Kobe also has all defensive team.
Yeah, Kobe accolades. Kobe played really good D.
He did
a lot of years. Perimeter D. Perimeter D is harder to quantify, right? Like blocks are such a good indicator, but at the same time, getting blocks is indicative partially of your own good positioning, but it's also potentially indicative of system, right? If you're playing something that you're kind of funneling everybody in the middle,
right.
Also potentially indicative of just having shitty perimeter defenders that always get beat by their man and you have to come there and bail them out, which is partially good on you, but also partially bad on your.
Or just going for everything. Like Alonzo Mourning got dunked on the most because he goes for every single block. And what that does is that actually messes up the defensive rotation, because now if you're going for the block, who's blocking your man out, right? And so, but Tim Duncan wasn't like that. Tim Duncan was actually – Tim Duncan may have played in the best power forward era, to be honest. I mean, because – all right, so this is my North Carolina Tar Heel bias. But had Rasheed Wallace not been a complete nut job, he may be – what did he miss? Like, he could shoot the three. He had a turnaround. He was defense. He knew the game's IQ was through the roof. He had great defense. He was just a crazy person.
Yeah.
And he still is.
He had a fucking bald spot. Like,
You know, he came into North Carolina. No, he was great. And then he played against Kevin Garnett.
Yeah.
And he caught the tail end of Charles Barkley. Like, this is before the game started going outside in.
Yeah, before it came stretch forward. And it was inside out.
And he still – and he was never that. But yet he always produced.
Yep. It's true. Even when the game did change, right, towards the tail end of his career, even as it's going more towards the three-pointer, he was still relevant and still producing.
And he had to play with Bruce Bowen. He had to play with Bruce
Bowen. Yeah.
Who wants to play with that guy?
No, certainly.
Brett, you have to explain to me why LBJ is not completely absent from this list.
Yeah. All right, so we got to wrap this up. This is my last point. we'll make this the last point. Again, I'm looking at stats here, right? I'm trying to honor championships and all these other categories, just very surface level stuff that might indicate where somebody could end up on this list. He's got three championships to everyone else's five and six. Maybe by the end of his career, he's got five or six, and this is a different conversation. He's third all-time in points already. He's eighth all-time in assists. So he's close. But to me, you know, Magic, 5 and 13 years, Kobe playing that era and being he's right there. He's number four all-time points. But having five championships to LeBron's three, Duncan's better, Jordan's better, Kareem's better. So we can have this conversation again. I mean, he just missed the list along with I had Wilt up there. Bill Russell was in the conversation. We'll have this conversation in, like, you know, 5 years, and we'll see where he's at.
Okay. Is anybody else top 10-ish on points and assists? Right, you said LeBron is already, what did you say, three or five all time?
LeBron is eight in assists.
And eight in assists. And
third points. No. So Magic is number one and not in points.
That's ridiculous, right?
Like, but so is blocks, rebounds, and points, being top 15 in all three categories.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you the most ridiculous stat, right? Michael Jordan played 11 full seasons, and he has six championships.
That's crazy.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah,
over 50%,
and that's sitting out 2 years. So it could have been a lot worse for the NBA.
Yeah, you know what? He's the second best. All right.
All right, man.
All right, please rate and subscribe for the show. We're at Head Game Psych on Twitter. You can find me on Twitter at Dr. Brett Levine. You can find that guy on Twitter, and I'm pointing at Ben, at BD Rosenberg PhD. You can find that other guy over there on Twitter at TJ Void. You've got a new handle.
Yeah, really easy. Really easy.
At TJ Void. TJ, you want to talk about the pod real quick?
Yeah, we have a 2% podcast, which a new episode just dropped today.
Hey, nice.
Right? We finished up season one. It's two black educators that discuss things, current events, and as well as things that go on in education from our perspective as the 2% of the entire working class of teachers. Only 2% of black males. So that's the name of the podcast.
Cool.
You can find more about Head Games on Psych Today. We're there, and the show is edited and produced by Joshy Boy, Josh Baca. Thanks so much for your edits and production, and thanks for listening or watching. See you guys next time.